So according to Ramban and others, the Omer connects Pesach with Shavuot, right? In fact, I think it's Ramban, I'm not sure. I think it's Ramban that says that it's like Chol HaMoed. That, I mean, obviously not halachic restrictions of Chol HaMoed, but the idea of being like between two festivals, and the two festivals are really essentially one, and the Omer is like the connecting idea, right? And the reason for that is because really we know that the whole goal of Pesach was Shavuot. As Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu on the burning bush, he said, "You take the Jewish people out of Egypt, they'll still be on this mountain." Right. So it's really one continuation. The Chinuch, the Sefer Chinuch, and the Rambam also has a similar idea. The whole idea was the Yidden were counting with such anticipation. Chavivus, that was precious for them. They were counting. Someone counts down to a loved one coming on, I guess they're counting down to become Hashem's nation at Matthew. Okay. So I want to have a look at the whole mitzvah of Sefer Omer and how that connects to Matan Torah.
Can I just confirm?
Yeah.
You have to count after three stars.
Yeah.
Because on my app it tells me to count before there's three stars, so I'm never.
So it depends what three stars. I can't look at it now because I have my phone to be wrong, but what do you mean by three? It depends. There's different. So three stars are called Tzeisach HaChavim,
mm-hmm.
But there's different opinions where Tzeisach HaChavim is, so it could be it's giving you a more lenient opinion.
Okay, but perhaps that's what it is, because when it pings to count,
the Chabad. Yeah, it's giving you a more lenient Tzeisach HaChavim, right? And when you know that, how do you know it's not three stars yet?
Because it's not when I say Havdalah typically.
Yeah, okay, good. Because the Shabbos, it's an interesting question you're asking, the Shabbos three stars, which I guess you look at the calendar and you see what Motzei Shabbos is, right?
Yeah.
Number one, that's a stricter Tzeisach HaChavim, because it's two opinions. And because it's Shabbos and Shabbos is biblical, it's all strict, therefore we go with the stricter one.
Mm-hmm.
It's about, it's a difference between 10 and 15 minutes, something like that.
Not even, I think, yeah.
Yeah, maybe even like 10
yeah.
Or and also, Shabbos, we add a few minutes, because the mitzvah to add to Shabbos, just like you light candles before the sunset, also take out Shabbos a few minutes late. So already it's built into the calendar time, so it means a few minutes really after Tzeisach HaChavim.
Okay, good.
So, but Sefiras Omer, number one, Sefiras Omer, according to most opinions nowadays, is actually a rabbinic mitzvah. Because we don't have the korban on, we don't have the flower offering of the Omer, right? And that's where you can be a bit more lenient and gives you the basic time. Yeah, that's what it is. So that's fine. It's always good to count when you hear the ping, otherwise
that's right.
Otherwise,
and also because I'm conscious because you can't eat or drink.
You can drink and you eat a fruit or something like that, you just can't eat proper meal.
And should I really do Maariv before I count?
No. You don't normally have Maariv, which most women don't.
Oh, I normally say the Shema.
Okay, no, Shema you should say that, but I'm saying there's the Amidah Maariv.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, a lot of women don't shakras and don't have Maariv.
Yeah.
You know the background to that because the Maariv is really optional. It used to be optional. Men took it on afterwards as an obligation, so it became obligatory, but women didn't, and therefore it remains optional, I mean, it remains non obligatory. But the Omer and Maariv are actually two separate things completely. Even in Shulchan Aruch, it's worked out that someone's in Shul Manor, in Shul Manor, and for whatever reason, he's not going to be able to double Maariv until much later, that's where he's going to forget the Omer. You can count before marriage.
Mm-hmm.
We don't normally do that, we normally count after marriage, but it doesn't, yeah, it's not a good marriage. You just can't. Count when you hear the thing. Okay. So let's have a look at the number one in the handout. Alright. So the Pasuk says like this. Language is very important. It says, Aswartem lochem, you should count for yourself. Bimocharas haShabbos, the day after Shabbos. Which is, Biyom haVi'achem es Oimarach Nufa, for the day you bring the woven korban, the flower offering, Shabbat Shabbosos Tumimos Tehiyah. 7 complete weeks. Right? Now, what does that mean? The day after Shabbos is also referring to the second day of Pesach. Now, obviously, we're talking about in Eretz Yisrael. Let's show first. Yom-tif, the first day of Pesach, only one day Yom-tif, right? That's the 15th of Nisan. The Torah then says, At the end of that day, they would go into the field, they would harvest barley, and then the next day they would bring a mincha, a flower offering from the barley, and you should count 7 weeks from the day after Shabbos. Now obviously the, and by the way, this is a very interesting expression, because the day after Shabbos does not mean Shabbos, it means Yom Tov. And in the Gemara, it talks about, maybe we went through this before, but I think it's one of the Parsha Shurim, I don't know as well. Now this created a huge debate in history. In the time of the Sadducees, the people didn't believe in Torah Shabbat, they only Torah Shabbat Sab, and the whole business, they always only started from Matzah Shabbos, whenever the first Shabbos was, and therefore they always had Shabbos on a Sunday. That was the thing, right? But we know through Torah Shabbat that doesn't mean that, it means that they have to Yom Tov, and that's it. Now, the obvious question is, it's great, but why did Hashem choose a language that was going to cause such a problem, right? I just going to say, he said, could have said, Mokhras and Pesach, or Mokhras and Boyed, whatever the case is, right? Okay, so we need to leave that, we'll see it there. Now, also the interesting phrase is, Usafartem Lachem, you must count for you. What does it mean for you? So, halachically, there's a whole discussion about this that the Omer, when you count the Omer, you can't be yoitz from someone else. Like a lot of things that we say, you can listen to someone else and just be yoitz around the Kiddush. The Omer and Arachel, it's got to be you, it's an individual mitzvah. Also, to exclude, there's another counting in the Torah, that is when you have the Shemitah, right, the sabbatical year, then it says you've got to count 7 Shemitahs. And the 50th is the Jubilee year, and that's what we call the Yovel, right? Now, there it's also a mitzvah count, it's not a mitzvah count, an individual's mitzvah count, the base thing has to count. And then at the end, they have to declare the Jubilee year. Here it means Lachem, it's an individual mitzvah. We'll see, Chassidus is a deeper, I mean, there's a more sort of deep ground idea, that the word usafartim comes from the word, what does sfartim mean? Sfartim means to count, but also sfartim means to brighten, to make the light, right? And the word sapir, which is a bright stone. And usafartim lachem, so this explains, means you shall brighten the you. You shall brighten yourself through the process of counting alone. Okay, what does all that mean? So, let's go. To understand this, let's go to a pasuk in number 2. The pasuk is in Shir HaShirim. Shir HaShirim is the Song of Songs written by King Solomon, King Shlomo HaMelech. Very much describes the relationship between the Jewish people and Hashem, and very much is based on the whole story of Pesach, Pesach and ultimately Shavuos, right? So it says there, it's the Jewish people talking, because in Shir HaShirim, actually, if you study it, it's quite hard to know who's talking. It's a dialogue between Hashem and the Jewish people, and it's not always clear who's talking, but yeah. But this is clear, this is the Jewish people talking, and they say like this. Moshcheni, they say to Hashem, you draw me, right? Number one. Then they say, Acharecha Norutza, after you we will run, right? And then, Hevi Ani HaMelech Chadorov, the king brought me to his chamber. Nogila B'nismacha Boch, we will rejoice, we will be happy and rejoice Boch with you. Okay, and then it continues on, but let's just have one of us. So what does that mean? We actually see three things here, right? The Jewish people are saying to Hashem, Moshcheni, draw me. Acharecha Narut, so after you, we will run, that's the second thing. And then the king brought me to his chambers. So first of all, Moshcheni, draw me, is in the singular, right? Acharecha Narutza is in plural. So why is it inconsistent? And Aviani Melech Chadorav, what's the third thing, the king bringing me into his chamber? Okay. So in order to understand this, we have to understand the whole process of Pesach and how it works. So in Chassidus, one of the concepts that it's all based on is this pasuk of how we found that the Yid went out of Mitzrayim. It says, number 3, it says, by Yugad the Melech Mitzrayim, and it was told to the king of Egypt, Ki Barach Ha'om, that the nation had fled. Right? This is, I'll tell you, we'll just give you context. This is the Chumash where after the Jews leave, and then they don't come, obviously they leave, they come back, they come to the Yam Suf, and then the Paro gets wind of it, and then he chases them, and he meets up with them at the sea, and then the sea splits, and he drowns, and his nation drowns, right? And he doesn't actually drown, he was actually killed.
Abraham's king of Nineveh.
Oh, Nineveh, exactly. But the language is interesting. He was told that they fled. Now they didn't flee. He kicked them out. I mean, with strong recommendation from the place, but he was one told to go. It doesn't mean they fled. Secondly, this idea of fleeing Mitzrayim, actually, we do find this as a bit of a theme. Because even Hashem told the Jewish people, when they eat the Korban Pesach the night before they leave, they have to eat it in haste, right? So it says your belt has to be girded, your shoes have to be on your feet, your stick on your hand, all ready to go. And then ultimately when they did leave, well, they didn't leave till the next morning, that was by design. Hashem didn't want them to leave in the middle of the night. Want them to leave publicly so everyone should see that they're leaving, even though they didn't like steal away, they actually left with great pride. They still lived in a rush, which is of course the whole basis of matzah, right? Where they bake bread, they didn't have time to rise, and the whole story, therefore it was the whole thing was b'chi pasah, they were never in a rush. We also know that Mashiach comes and says it won't be b'chi pasah, we're not gonna go out of the rush. The pasuk that says, you won't leave Golos in a rush. You'll go slow, you'll walk. Right? So what's the difference? Yeah. See, here's what happens, right? This is the whole idea. Yeah. And we'll try to go back to what was important and so that. So we have what's called a nefesh of a kiss and a nefesh of a mouse, right? As we know. We go into the depth in Tanya already. And the nefesh of the kiss obviously is godly. Now, nefesh of the kiss can't really be purified, but it could be captured. It could be in ghosts. Meaning, nefesh of the kiss could be in a state where it's unable to express itself, right? Okay. But it's not. But it's essentially holy. It's essentially godly, right? Nefesh of Bamis is a man, and not like that. Nefesh of Bamis is klipa, right? It's klipa. As we explained many times, the Tani Shurim, it's klipa right from the start, actually. Even before it's done anything wrong, it's klipa because it's conceals godliness. And therefore it is a force that tempts us to indulge in egocentricity, in temptation, in gashmias, in worldliness, and so on and so forth. Right? And by extension, so that's nefesh habamish within the person, by extension, the world has both. The world has godly sparks and sometimes godly connection. But also has tumah, has ra, has bad, right? It's good and evil in the world. One of the things that we say about Yetzias Mitzrayim is that it didn't affect the nefesh habamis at all. It only affected the nefesh habamis. Meaning, bad, yeshus, klipa, will slow light well. And therefore, something that you have to run away from.
That's why you have to rush.
Right. Gotta run away from it. Now, I'll explain why it is with Shrine was for Nefesh HaKis, what it means is that they even went out of goals, but they essentially had not changed. Their personality had not changed. Right?
They were at that 49th level of.
Tumah, yeah, exactly. And it took 49 days to get out of that. See why that happens, but essentially something a huge did happen. Something huge absolutely happened. It was an internal goal, it was an internal redemption for Nefesh HaKis. The Maral talks about this. He says that even though we find that there were other goals, the Maral asks this question, how come we celebrate Pesach if after there was another goal? Right? It means it wasn't right. We know it's not the ultimate goal anyway, but he says what's the big deal about Pesach? He says Pesach was huge. Why is it huge? Something happened in Pesach that can never be taken away. Before that, everything was in gold, both the good and the Mishnah. Whereas by Mitzrayim, the ability for the Shama to express itself was revealed. It was the concept of inner freedom, spiritual freedom, was given to us. Now, the free could ever say this in the name of the Rebbe Hashem. You know the story. The Friedrich Rebbe, when he came out of jail, in the whole story of Beis Tammuz, right? But not Beis Tammuz, when he came out of jail, he was sent to exile. Another story, he was sent to exile first. So, say, 1927, the Friedrich Rebbe was in prison for spiritual Yiddishkeit. He was then released on Gimel Tammuz in the third of Tammuz, and it was, I don't know if Gimel Tammuz is different by Bayer, but it was Gimel Tammuz. And then he was going to be sentenced to exile for like 9 years or something, or 10 years. It was reduced to 3 years, then it was reduced to 12 days, and 10 days, and 10 days later he was released on the basis of the breakfast. But what he did was, you know, the figure was a man of tremendous mysterious nefesh, and was willing to take risks and sacrifice his life to show the strength of Yiddishkeit. So on the way, he was allowed to go home for a few hours, and then he went to Kastroma, this far-flung place, but he went on through a train, and about the train station, and the chassidim, at risk to their lives actually, came out of mass to see him and to welcome him. And what he did was, knowing that there was the KGB there, knowing that there were informants there, he stopped at the station, he got up and he said, a sikha. Quite a defiant sikha. And one of the things he said, the Rebbe Rashab said that our neshamas never went into Golos, only our guf. In other words, that means since it's Yitzhak Mitzrayim, the neshama cannot go into Golos. Therefore, Yid can be in the worst places and his neshama can still express itself. Physically and spiritually, the neshama can always be united, right? So, that's what he said in the Buzzer. And he said, that's why, you know, we have to be strong, we have to be Yishka, because the neshama is not in Golos. Just an interesting thing, just a side thing. It's a nice word from the Ishbitz Rebbe, Yezah HaGadol, and explains why it's such an emphasis on eating an egg. I'm not saying that. Do I have an experiment?
No.
I always say, especially in South Africa, you know, they were educated in South Africa, like eating an egg on Pesach night, like here in Shafir or something. It's like, wow, it's like one of the people, just, even though it's really optional. But there's a little bit in there, or put an egg on a seder plate and eat it, by the way. So he says a beautiful idea, he says, because the ruler from Israel is very much like an egg, huh? So what's an egg? Egg hatches, right? Egg hatches, it's a complete thing, meaning it's ready to eat, you can make fried egg, you can eat it, you can celebrate, you can enjoy it, whatever. But in truth, it's incomplete, because the purpose of an egg really is to hatch into a chicken, right? See, that's exactly what happens with Israel. The Yid came out of Golos, that was a gula. It was a gula. And like one of my rails before was an eternal gula. Like no one can ever affect the Shabbat after that. But it's not the tachlis. The tachlis is the chicken. The tachlis is the gula on the Shia, right? So it's like an egg. Okay. Back to this. What does that mean? It means like this. In general, there's something called in Chassidus Isarusa de la Eila, and then Isarusa de la Tata. There's the awakening that comes from above. Awakening comes from below, right? When there's an awakening from above, yeah, Chassidus explains, there's an old man from the Alter Rebbe, a famous man in the Yikra, about how the apostle at the beginning of the Yikra talks about Korbanos HaRuach, right? When Hashem sends an awakening from above, he doesn't talk to the Nefesh HaBamis. Because the Nefesh HaBamis is resistant to any awakening. It does talk to the Nefesh HaLakis, right? It talks to the Nefesh HaLakis because the Nefesh HaLakis always wants to be inspired. And then when there's sometimes something amazing happens and awakens the person, so what part of the person is awakened? The Nefesh HaLakis. Because the Nefesh HaLakis sort of is energized. Therefore now can express itself and it's able to... But, that's the good news, but the problematic news is it doesn't affect the Nefesh HaLakis at all. Which means it doesn't actually change the person. Which is why, says a man, which is why we find that people can be often very, very, very much aroused spiritually, and then dissipates after a while. Right? Because the person hasn't changed. Right? Who's the person? Again, the consciousness of the person, who's the Nefesh HaBamis, not the Nefesh HaKis, right? Personality of the person's that, whatever, nothing's changed. It's just the Nefesh HaKis has empowered itself, so temporarily it wins the war. But the enemy's still there. Big bad bully of the Nefesh HaBamis is still there, so therefore you can make a strong comeback, right? That's why when the Yidden went out of the tribe, you know, they weren't, the whole thing was an Isarusa delay, it was made from above. They didn't deserve the whole thing, right? Hashem took them out because he promised to have obviously Yaakov and he saw potential and so on, but they weren't changed at all. Okay. Now, second thing we have to understand is, so what I said, the second part of the process is the nefesh habamis has to change. And then Hashem is can't do for us. Not can't do anything, but doesn't want to do for us, right? Because he created a resistant being within us, and the purpose of that is for us to change that being. If he would do it, he doesn't have to create us in the first place. Right? So the process is, he gives an awakening, the awakening doesn't talk to Hashem, because Hashem is resistant, and Hashem's not going to do anything about it. He could, and he could transform it, but he's not going to. Because Hashem has to change himself, that's all purpose of creation. Now, what does it mean when we say that the Nefesh of a Kiss is awakened, or what does it mean when we say the Nefesh of Abbas is awakened, or changes, right? So it goes into another thing that we learned before, that is that both the Nefesh of a Kiss and the Nefesh of Abbas have 10 powers, yeah? But the dominant force of the Nefesh of a Kiss is Seichel, is insight. Nefesh of a Kiss understands, internalizes, appreciates, is sensitive to godliness and so on, right? Obviously, it needs loving Hashem, fearing Hashem, but the main idea is Chochmah in Adas, the main, right? Nefesh HaBamis, on the other hand, is not like that. Not the dominant force of Nefesh HaBamis is actually not Seichel at all. It's not Chochmah in Adas, it's only there to serve the midas, only to serve the emotion. Nefesh HaBamis is an animal, it's an impulsive, emotional being. And therefore, all it does is it operates mostly on midas, right? So, which is the personality of a person.
But it runs.
Sorry?
But it runs. It can run.
This running actually is more Nefesh HaBamis running.
Oh, is it?
Away from the Nefesh HaBamis.
Oh, okay. I thought it was taking the animal passions to... Okay.
Yeah, no, that's the ultimate purpose. Yeah. It's not so much the running, it's more the passion. But running over there means running away from that because you've got to avoid it. You haven't transformed it yet, right? That's when Mashiach comes along, but you could have captured Nefesh HaBamis by then. We transformed it. So therefore, what does that mean? It means like this. It means that the work that Nefesh HaBamis does is mainly in midas, maybe in the emotional makeup of the person, right? And that's what the Omer is about. So Hashem says like this, I've done the work, I took out your Nefesh HaBamis. Now I'm giving you 7 weeks to come there, okay? And to work on yourself each week with another midah. See why it's weeks, not days, but right? So first week is Chesed, next week is Mura, it's very simple. And that's very, very hard work. That's what the Omer is. It's a time of self-refinement, right? Interesting. The Nefesh of a Kiss, the first day of Pesach, the first night of Pesach, is Isarusa Tadalei, that's awakening from above, which by the way is not only then, it means now also. This tremendous Kedusha, the first night of Pesach, there's a word that they say, why we say Kadesh or Rechatz, right? Kadesh means make yourself holy, it means make kiddush, but it means make yourself holy. Rechatz means to wash. And the first one said, normally, spiritually speaking, one has to first wash off the dirt, the spiritual dirt, then you can become holy. Pesach night is different. Pesach night is an explosion of spirituality and godliness, that you can right away become Kadesh, you can become holy right away, and afterwards you work on removing the dirt, right? Anyway, there's that kiddush on the first hour of Pesach, the same is an amazing thing, but only if that's Nefesh HaBamis. It's interesting, what's the main mitzvah? What's one of the main mitzvahs in Pesach? Like the three matzahs, right? The three matzahs represent the Chochmah bin Adas. Because that's the Nefesh HaBamis. Nefesh HaBamis is Seichel. It's the power of understanding. So it's the dominant force of the Nefesh HaBamis being expressed and being released, so to speak. Right? Incidentally, just parenthetically, that's the whole Seder type of it. You know, the three matzahs is Chochmah bin Adas. And there's six things on the Seder plate, which is, and the way Rizal does it, Chabad does it, is to place them in two triangles, which represent the Chesed, the Tiferes, Netzach, and Yisrael, which are the main emotions. And then the actual Seder plate, which goes actually in Chabad, goes underneath everything, you actually don't even see it really,
yeah.
Is Malchus. That absorbs everything, right? Because the ultimate goal is to transform all those temples. First day Pesach is mainly the Nefesh HaBamis, mainly the Chochmah bin Adas. Okay. This comes the second day. Hashem says, no, now it's your turn. You have to refine yourself. You have to start the process.
Which is why you only count from the second day.
Second night, right, yeah. right. And how does the counting work? What's it all called? It's called Sfirat HaOmer. Omer means a measurement of flour, right? And that's also connected to the Korban Omer. So the second day Pesach, second night Pesach, they would harvest, second morning Pesach, they would bring the Korban, and it was flour. Flour. Now, always their flour. So in Vayikra, we know that a flour offering is called a milch, right? Milch. Flour offering. There are many different types of flour offering. Sometimes there was a sin offering, a donation offering. Often poor people were given the option to bring milch because they couldn't afford animals, whatever the case is, right? But always, always, with the exception of two cases, always the milch offering was wheat flour. The Omer was an exception. The Omer was barley flour. Why? That's not important. Because Morris says that we now eat by the chomp, but we learn things about the animal good about the body soup, I don't know exactly. But the Morris says that the wheat is Michael Odom, it's the food of people. Right? There are 5 grains you can make bread with and make a matzion, right? Or mazonison. The truth is we kind of use all of them in different ways, but we hardly ever use barley. Except for like chocolate or stew or something like that, right? Like, I mean, examples of such thing about this person actually, that you know, someone's stomach is a bit sensitive, so the spelt matzah is important. If it's really bad, they're celiac, so you get oat matzah, right? It's oat one of 5 grams. They can, you can make matzah of oat, you can make flour of oat, you can make matzah of oat, right? But no one offers you a barley matzah, like, I don't know, it's not really good to make a bread out of, right? Because the Gemara says that chitim, wheat, is michael odom, the food of people, whereas sa'orim, barley, is the food of animals, animal fodder. That's why the Torah says that you have to bring korban omer on the second day, because that's when work on the behemoth starts.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
First day is odom, so it's matzah, it's different. Second day starts the work on the behemoth, the nefesh habamis, and that's why it's specifically barley flour. By the way, the other exception, they were just for interest rate, but the other exception when they bought a flower offering of barley was with the soit of the woman garnish for it. That's because her actions was very inappropriate, actions of an animal, therefore she has to bring the korban out. Okay. But that's the idea, right? So therefore starts with the working on the nefesh habamis. And that's why it's korban omer, the animal flower. Then it goes for 7 weeks. After 7 weeks is Matan Torah. So Matan Torah means you've completed the 7 weeks, and then you've created like a oneness now between the Nefesh of the Kis and the Nefesh of the Habis. The whole person has changed. And now we're ready for the ultimate revelation of Hashem, which is Matan Torah. Now, truth be told, that this is the model that was happening when they left Mitzrayim, but it was a model in capsule form, which means it actually didn't happen perfectly. Because we know that even the Matan Torah was a little bit of a stress dilaela. They were kind of ready, but it was a very crash course of being ready, right? It's not that you can't change your national powers in 7 weeks.
After hundreds of years of being enslaved.
Yeah. So it's a model, that one, because really it's a model of the whole journey of the Jewish people till Mashiach. Matan Torah was a preview of Mashiach. So when I say you come to Matan Torah, you have to get national completely one, yeah, on one level, but the ultimate unification of that would be when Mashiach comes. That would be the ultimate Matan Torah, so to speak, right? Okay. Now, if we understand that, then we can go back to the pasuk. Let's go back to number 2. Can we understand? Moshcheini, Hashem draws me, right? Hashem draws me in the singular. That's Yetzias Mitzrayim, that's the first day of Pesach. Yeah? Because Hashem is taking me out. Me means the Nefesh of the Kis. So we say to Hashem, you drew me out, that's what you did. Now it's our turn. What do we do? Acharecha merutza, we will run after you. We, the plural, being not only Nefesh of the Kis and the Nefesh of Abbas.
Okay.
You get it?
Yes.
Right? Then, after that process is finished, then the king responds again. But this time, maybe, Ani HaMelech HaNorah, the king means me. Me means both. Unification. It's back to singular, because now there's a oneness between Nefesh of the Kis and Nefesh of Abbas. And the king brings me into his inner chamber, which is the connection, the ultimate connection, which happened in Matan Torah. Right? That's also, right, that's also why, going back now to the whole thing about the Tzedukim, why Hashem calls the first day Pesach Shabbos. Why? Because it emphasizes this point. One of the big differences between Shabbos and Yom Tov, even in the way we say the bracha, actually, right? So in our Shabbos, we end off the middle bracha of Amidah. We say, Baruch Atah Hashem, Mekadesh HaShabbos. We bless Hashem, He who sanctifies the Shabbos, right? Yom Tov, we don't say it. Yom Tov, we call it Zmanim. Shem Shemiz Yom Tov. Right? We say, we don't say, Baruch Atah Hashem, Mekadesh HaZmanim. We say, Mekadesh Yisrael HaZmanim. Why? You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, yeah.
Why? Because one of the fundamental differences between Shabbos and Yom Tov is this. The Kedusha of Shabbos has nothing to do with us. It was inborn in creation, every 7 days is holy, and that's it. We don't create the Shabbos anywhere. Okay, there is a Hasidus, a whole discussion about that even once it's created by Hashem, we can add to that Kedusha. Of course, we can contribute, but really, essentially, the Kedusha of Shabbos is completely Hashem made. That's why we say, Baruch Atah Hashem, Mekadosh Shabbos, we bless Hashem, He sanctifies the Shabbos. Yom Tov is very different. Do you do this the daily mitzvah of Rama?
No, I don't.
You should consider it. Sorry.
Why do you think I've stopped writing to the Rebbe? Last time I wrote, he told me to do chitas. So now... I can't add this to it as well.
So you should do it. At least join my WhatsApp. It takes 2-3 minutes.
Okay.
Focus on the Rebbe. It's the Rebbe's campaign. It's really important. Okay, well, all right. So because you know that today actually starts the laws of making the calendar. The Mitzvah made the calendar, right? So what's the Mitzvah? All our festivals are actually made by the Jewish people. Hashem wanted that. Mm-hmm. Hashem gave us the Mitzvah that we have to sanctify the world. Okay, it was much more emphasized in the time of the Temple when Thomas Mingles, when we would actually wait for witnesses, and it was like, every month they had to be re-sanctified by the base of it, right? And we know there's two options, that a month can have 29 days or 30 days, not always that the same. There's even a Medrash which says about Rosh Hashanah that when Malachim asked Hashem when he's going to judge the world, he says, I don't know, we'll see. Let's see when the Eden are going to make Rosh Hashanah, right? Let's go down and we'll see. Like, you know, symbolic, that's the idea, right? It says Eden can make a mistake. And now we do now Rosh Hashanah, which is all a continuation of the system that was made. Hillel was made by the Chazal, it's all made by us. That's why we say it's really supposed to the Tata. That's why we say by Yom Tov, we don't say Mekadesh Hazmanim. We say Mekadesh Yisroel Hazmanim. Mm-hmm. Hashem sanctifies the Jewish people who then sanctify the Yom Tov. And then Hashem sends the Kedusha when we make Rosh Chodesh. So when is Chometz forbidden? Fifth of the Nisan. When is Nisan? We have to make the Nisan. We have to make Rosh Chodesh.
Except Hashem is saying the day we choose to make that is considered a Shabbos.
Yes, but in the Yom Tov itself, what happened on Pesach, the first day of Pesach is kind of more like a Shabbos. Not in terms of the Yom Tov of Pesach, but in terms of what happened on Pesach. What happened on the first day of Pesach, which was Yetzias Mitzrayim, that was an exclusive Dilayla. Maybe now it's a little bit more of our contribution as well, but when it happened the first time, it was pure Hashem, right? And Hashem in this pasuk is emphasizing the whole concept of Sfira Sarebra. He was saying, you should keep Pesach, and then with Sfartem Lachem, then you should brighten up the you meaning of Shabbos. You have to now do the work the day after the Shabbos. Shabbos was in the Leila, so I did all the work and I spoke to you kiss. And I ignited it. But now, the day after Shabbos, now you're going to start bring the carbon over, the animal carbon, and now you're going to start working on your own Nefesh HaNafs. Right, so that's how it explains the whole idea of why it's called Shabbos, and mm-hmm. also that Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, one of the first ones is singular, then plural, and singular. Right? Just one final idea. So why 7 weeks? What's 7 weeks? So the cost of 7 weeks is because we know if you count the Sefirah every night, you know that there's not Chesed of Chesed, Bura of Chesed, Teres of Chesed. And of course, I got every one of the seven midas, each one is intertwined with the other seven, right? Now, that is true in how we should do it. In other words, in order to really refine the Nefesh HaBamis, it takes a week, because we've got it actually not a day. In other words, it can't be summarized by a day, it's got to be summarized by a whole week. And in fact, the halacha is you've got a couple of days and weeks, right? We know that. What's that? The idea is because the essential nature of the middos of the Nefesh HaBamis are that they don't integrate with other middos. Because Nefesh HaBamis is all based on ego. Ego means I'm locked in. The person wants the chesed, there's no diluting the chesed or working with the guru, it doesn't work like that. right? Where you see it in boys is more in children, right? Children are either unbelievably wonderful or unbelievably terrible, right? Kid can everything's great, and then when someone knocks the toy over, and everything's terrible. The whole world is a disaster, right? Because there's no integration. It's either complete chesed or complete vur, or complete sadness or complete happiness. That's right. The no integration is because it's based on ego, based on yeshus. The possibility of integrating midas is really it's a humility thing. It's the ability to go beyond my personality and then integrate something else in that, right? That integration process is very much brought out in the 7 weeks of the Omer. That's what we go through. Every day we say it's chesed, it's not just chesed, it's chesed, gvura of chesed, it's feres of chesed. And we spell gvura, we do the same thing. It's to work through the ego and say there can be integration. And that integration is...
That's how you refine it, by integrating
Yeah, the refinement comes through integration. So learning it, refinement comes through bits already, right? But that's why it starts with matzah. This is the point also, right? This is the point. It's got to be, you can't have the Mesiris without the first day of Pesach. First Pesach is the mitzvah of eating matzah. It's a total bittul.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get rid of the bittul, now you can start integrating. And now you can start refining the Nefesh HaBamos and not being stuck in ego, not being insistent that it's either this or that, all that kind of stuff, right? And that becomes the process of birur, of being mevara, refining Nefesh HaBamos, but on the basis of bittul, and that gives room for this integration process to take place. That's what we integrated with throughout the whole weeks. And that's the synopsis of Shri Saimer of business.
Thank you so much, Rabbi.
All right.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. You put it on just for me.